My heart has no words. My eyes have no tears left. Mind it done gone crazy. Went off and married my fears. Now I'm standing here with nothing left to tell you. I'm standing here with nothing to prove. I got nothing.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Mormon Expression Voices. This is Heather, and today I'm interviewing a person who is not a part of the normal Mormon Expression community. He's somebody that I reached out to because he's got a story that I think should be shared. His name is Drew Call. Hello, Drew.
Hello, Heather.
Hello, Drew. So why don't we go ahead and just jump right into your story the way we always do with Mormon Expression Voices. You were born into the church.
Yes.
And raised in a faithful family, right?
Very, yes.
Okay. How did you feel about the church when you were growing up? How did you like being a member?
I enjoyed it. I had a lot of good friends. All my family was in it. It was a thing to do. It's the only thing I knew. And I had a lot of fun.
You enjoyed primary and...
I love primary. I love to sing. Mm-hmm. So primary was fun.
Okay. So you didn't really have a lot of conflict as a kid?
Not really. Yeah.
No, none of us really do, I don't think. I'm assuming that you did all of the standard Mormon things. Did you guys do family home evening and all of that kind of
we
stuff?
We did. We weren't really faithful as family home evening. You know, typical fighting if we got together too often. But we had fun. There's a few key family home evenings that I recall that are very enjoyable.
Okay. And did you consider yourself as being Mormon and your family being Mormon, or did you kind of worry about, well, we're not doing family home evening and we're not doing scripture study or...
Oh, we did scripture study.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Every morning, 6 a.m.
Okay. I was talking to somebody about my experience growing up, and we didn't do family home evening or scripture study. And somebody asked me, well, did you worry about that? Did you think your family was sinning? And I'm like, I don't think it occurred to me. So anyway, I was kind of curious as to your response.
No, I thought we were very Mormon.
Very Mormon.
Living a great Mormon life and doing everything we're supposed to.
And how about as a teenager? How did you feel about the church as a teenager?
I was fully involved in it. I was going to seminary through junior high and high school. Mm-hmm. And I was doing everything I was supposed to, and was on seminary council my senior year. And just was doing everything I thought was supposed to be done.
Okay. And... Did you feel like you had a testimony that was really strong? You believe the church was true?
No, I didn't really fully believe it. I just said what I needed to because I didn't want to get made fun of or ridiculed.
Okay. And why didn't you really believe it? Did you have reasons that you like had thought about and developed for yourself?
No, not really. It never clicked. It didn't ever ring true to me. You know, I did the whole, you know, kneeling and praying and asking God if it was true or not, but I never got that feeling everybody talks about. But I just kept going along with it because I didn't know anything else.
And how did you try to explain to yourself why you didn't have the responses that the people around you were claiming to have?
No, I just kept going on.
Did you figure that maybe if you just keep doing what you're supposed to do, maybe eventually it'll click?
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't a matter of, I really don't believe this is true, I'm just going along to get along. It's that you were just expecting at some point in the future for things to pan out.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. Do you want to talk about your sexual orientation during this time? Did it play into anything?
I don't think it really played into anything at that time. But I had those feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, I was always attracted to men. But... it was always hidden. I didn't want to ever talk about it. I was too scared and too afraid because I didn't want to be made fun of. When I was a little kid, I was always teased. So I was very cautious.
Sensitive to it.
Very sensitive.
Okay. And did you believe that this was something that you would overcome by righteousness and praying and the things that the church teaches?
Well, I knew it. You know, I was taught that it was wrong. So I felt I was sinning. That it was wrong. So I needed to not... think about it and not do anything about it, and just keep living the Mormon life. You know, keep going to church, keep reading the scriptures, going on mission, get married, and it would just kind of just go away.
Go away eventually.
And I'd never talk to anybody about it, and nobody ever counseled me that I needed to do those things to make it go away. Okay. I just kind of told myself that.
Okay. Was the teasing that you experienced as a child, do you think it was it related to that, or was it?
It wasn't related to that. I don't think at all. I was very, very sensitive. I always was very loving and very caring to everybody.
Mm-hmm. You weren't macho enough.
I guess I wasn't very macho. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved giving hugs out to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And at that time, was Layton a more rural community?
It was very rural. Yeah, I grew up on a farm.
You did grow up on a farm.
Yes.
Okay. So you were expected to like live up to the stereotype of a farm kid then.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, you know, that would be tough if you don't fit into that.
When I was 14, I couldn't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. I was the youngest out of the older group of boys. So I just kind of got pushed out and decided to stop working on the farm. And I stayed home and did chores around the house instead of the farm.
Oh, okay. Because you received
I was being teased,
tormented you were working as well.
Right. Yeah, for my brothers and cousins.
Okay.
And I was tired of it.
Yeah.
It was hard work. Mm-hmm. Not that it was, I didn't want to do hard work, but.
Oh, I grew up on a farm. I understand. Okay. So you were in high school and, you didn't really believe the church was true, but you kind of felt like it'll come eventually if I just keep doing what I'm supposed to do. And these feelings that I'm having will go away eventually if I just keep doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Did you date at all?
I'd go on to the dances, mm-hmm. but I'd always choose a different girl. It was never the same girl twice.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, it was like, I can't date anybody, you know, because I was trying to be the good Mormon person and get ready for my mission. And I shouldn't be dating anybody because I need to be able to have my head on straight. And, you know, I had fun. I had a great time. I had a lot of friends, a lot of girls I could hang out with, a lot of guys. But it wasn't really close relationships with anybody.
Okay. So did you have trepidation about your future?
You know, I not really. I just was going to, my plan was, you know, go through high school, go to college for a year, go on a mission and come home. And
you thought when I get to that part, I'll plan further then?
Right. Okay. I didn't have any thoughts other than get home and then find somebody to marry.
Okay. So you were pretty straight-laced, weren't rebellious or go through that kind of a phase?
I was very straight-laced. Okay. Probably a little too much. I was too afraid of getting caught.
Okay.
And I didn't want to get punished.
Mm-hmm.
I had, you know, I wanted to get to trouble and fun. My brothers were always devious, but they didn't like me tagging around because they couldn't be devious if I was there.
Okay.
Because I would tell on them, but at least that's what they thought.
Okay, so you had an image that people perceived of you of being the good kid, and you kind of lived up to that because it was comfortable, maybe.
Very comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's for me, it's easy being a good guy.
Okay, all right. So, and you had no hesitation about going on a mission. You were planning on it for years,
right?
And did you put in your papers as soon as you were 19? And
I did.
Okay.
And didn't even finish the year of college. I went on before I finished the last semester.
Okay.
Of my first year.
So you did one semester and then went on your mission.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you went to Massachusetts?
I did.
Boston area?
I served in downtown Boston, Western Massachusetts, mm-hmm. Cape Cod area.
That sounds
all over
fun.
The place. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And how was the experience of being a missionary?
It was very enjoyable. I enjoyed being away from home, mm-hmm. meeting new people, doing and learning new experiences. It was tough because I didn't really fully believe it, what I was teaching, but that's what I was supposed to do. My entire heart wasn't into it all the time,
mm-hmm.
but I did what I was supposed to. I was out pounding the pavement and knocking on doors, talking to people.
Okay.
You know, baptized a few people here and there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have one of those mission presidents that kind of stressed that the number one person you're saving out here on your mission is yourself and you're supposed to be developing your testimony type of a thing, or?
No. I didn't really get that feeling from him.
Okay. But did you work on your testimony during your mission? Did you
I read all the scriptures, mm-hmm. The entire standard works. I read all the missionary library books, Miracle of Forgiveness, Jesus the Christ, all of those. I was just reading. It didn't like strengthen my testimony, or a couple of them made me feel really awful about myself.
Like the miracle of forgiveness, probably.
Yeah, that was really tough.
Yeah. Did you try to explain to yourself why you still weren't developing a testimony?
No. Part of it is just like, it's not there. Maybe this is the testimony everybody does have, and I'm expecting more than what it is.
Like, maybe I'm misunderstanding what they say these experiences are, and I know it's true, so I'm getting the confirmation I need, even though it isn't spectacular kind of a thing.
Exactly. Okay. You know, I'd get emotional at times, because mm-hmm. I wear my emotions on my sleeves, and I can get teary-eyed really quick over things. Mm-hmm. And so there's moments and times in my life that I would get emotional and I'd cry, and it was a great feeling.
And did you attribute that to spirit?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe this is the spirit.
Okay. Is there anything, do you have any stories about your mission you want to tell, or anything you want to talk about in relation to being a missionary?
Not really.
Okay. Not a problem.
I don't have any like cool stories, and I got beat up.
You got beat up by like a companion or a non-member?
A non-member on the street.
Oh. Yeah. I know a guy who told me that, I can't remember where he went, somewhere back east, I think, North Carolina maybe. And he was telling me that like he got things thrown at him and like all sorts of stuff like that. Where did you experience that kind of hostility?
I got picked up off the ground and slammed against a building once.
That's not cool. And were you just walking down the street, or had you like stopped to engage with people?
I was walking down the street, and the guy was yelling at us across the street and telling us to stay away from his wife and stop talking to her. And
okay. What year did you go on your mission?
97 to 99.
So anti-Mormonism was still a little vocal then. I mean, do you think missionaries are probably still experiencing some of the same things?
I'm pretty sure.
Really? Interesting. I guess I've never considered that kind of stuff would be going on now. I guess I assume people are just ignored. So you came back from your mission and you went back to school and reassociated yourself with your wife.
It was a few years after my mission.
Okay.
I was 24 when we met.
Okay.
So I came home from my mission, and I started working for a ward member. Mm-hmm. Who gave me a job, which was great, coming home from a mission and having a job, mm-hmm. and I didn't have to look for one. Mm-hmm. Put me in Salt Lake so I could go to LDS Business College and mm-hmm. study computers. It's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Dated here and there, and then eventually I got a job with a church while going to college there, and then I bumped into the person I married.
Okay. And so when you dated along this time, were you at all dealing with your homosexuality, with your sexual orientation, or?
A little bit. I was looking at porn here and there, and I was always excited about that, but I knew it's not what I should be doing. I should be trying to find a wife.
So you try to minimize it and figure, and I imagine it's only been recently that the church has backed off this notion that if you just find a girl, fall in love, there won't be a problem.
Right. And that's part of my thinking. It's like, okay, I need to, put this aside, find a wife, mm-hmm. and get married, and then that's going to go away.
Okay.
But it never did go away.
Right. Because, it's not a choice.
Exactly.
So when you were dating your wife, did you think this is it? This is what's going to...
I dated a couple of girls here and there, and we were friends, but mm-hmm. when I started dating my wife, we became best friends, mm-hmm. and we could talk about everything. We laughed, we had fun. It was very enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, gosh, this is the person I can be with, because I can laugh, I can have fun, and we can talk, and doesn't feel awkward. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Although there was no sexual desire, which did worry me. It worried me tremendously. And on our wedding night, it was very prevalent. And I feel really bad about that. Mm-hmm. For both me and her. It was not fair to her.
Did she know ahead of time?
No. I'd never talked to anybody.
Had always kept it to yourself.
Yeah. Every time I was interviewed, I'd always say, no, there's no problems, no issues. Mm-hmm. I was one working for the church, and I didn't
want to. So you had to keep your temple recommend.
Exactly. And I was too afraid. I was making too much money to lose the job. Mm-hmm. So I would say, yes, you know, I'd answer all the questions accordingly.
The way they needed to be answered.
Right.
Okay. So did you guys get married in the temple?
We did.
And you settled into a Mormon life and...
Yes. We moved into a house right away. Mm-hmm. We built a house in Layton and a great little community. Mm-hmm. Eventually started making a lot of friends in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, started having kids. Mm-hmm. And just having a good time. But there's always that issue in the back of my mind. But I put it off. I wasn't going to do anything about it. I was married. I was committed.
Okay.
And I was trying to be happy. And I was.
Mm-hmm. Let's step back for just a little bit. What did you think of the temple when you initially went through?
My very first time when I was 19, right before my mission, it freaked me out.
Yeah.
It didn't feel comfortable. And when my dad was trying to explain to me what was going to happen, you know, in the car while in the temple parking lot, I got really scared and I was like, whoa, this is weird.
So what he was telling you before you actually went into the temple wasn't something it wasn't in what you thought was going to happen that day.
I had no idea. I wasn't prepared at all. Nobody had talked to me about any of the ceremonies that go on in the temple.
Okay. So you went in and just white knuckled through it, I guess.
Yeah. You know, my dad tried to explain a few things and I just kind of held my breath and said, all right, this is how it's going to be. Part of me was a bit excited about it, but not. I was really nervous, but went through it and thought, I never want to do that ceremony again. I don't want to be naked in front of another guy in the temple.
Right. And that was, I hear recently they've made some changes so that they only touch your forehead now, I guess.
Yeah, I have no idea. I haven't done that ceremony since. Mm-hmm. It's not something I wanted to experience again.
So even like when you went through to get married, you didn't do an endowment session?
We did an endowment session, but we didn't
not
do the initiatory.
Yeah, gotcha.
I never did the initiatory. So.
Gotcha. Okay, so you settled into life in Layton and you were... How was your testimony as a newlywed and as a married father?
You know, I just was plugging along. I still had the same feelings like, okay, this is the church. This is my life. This is what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I have a job with the church. I have to keep my temple recommend. So I have to go to church every week. I have to put the show on that. Yes, I'm an active member. So I did. And I don't feel like I pretended. I just was living my life that way.
Mm-hmm. You were going through the motions. Mm-hmm. Did there come a point in that time where you decided this just isn't true and I have to pretend it is?
Yeah, there was. And it was pretty difficult.
What brought about that decision? Do you remember?
I don't think there was any particular event or experience. Other than there was, let me back up. I guess there was a couple. Mm-hmm. Right after I was married, I had my gallbladder removed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my wife and I, we had to keep working. We couldn't take a lot of time off. We just gotten married and spent all of our vacation time, and I had sick leave, so I had to stay home for a week. Mm-hmm. And I told the bishop, the elders quorum president, and all these people in the ward that, hey, I'm having surgery and I'm going to be down in bed for a week. I need some assistance. Mm-hmm. Not a single person ever came by. Nobody called, said, how are you doing?
So you had even actually asked for help then?
I did.
I interviewed a couple who had a baby that was preterm and in the NICU, and then they were kind of trapped at home with a sickly baby for about a year, and they also didn't receive help, and she kind of chalked it up to, but I'm not the type to really ask for it. I'm more like, no, I'm okay. Read my mind, but I'm okay, you know? So she didn't really blame them, but you had reached out and said, I'm going to need help during this time. And they were like,
I was really worried. It's like, here I am. I'm going to have surgery. It's my first surgery I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And my wife is going to go off, you know, to work. So I was going to be home alone. Mm-hmm. Her mom came over and helped the first couple of days, but I was still expecting, you know, a meal or at least a phone call or a knock on the door asking how I was doing.
And nothing. None of that ever happened.
And that really hurt. It made me feel like I really didn't matter in that ward.
Like you were invisible and your needs were invisible. And did you start to wonder about the organization as far as like people claim that this is the way the church works, but people don't actually live it, or?
Well, you have all the lessons about being home teachers, and you hear the great stories of this home teacher helped us out so much. He was always there. And, but I never saw that. And I tried to be that home teacher, but I never was. So, so I can't claim that I was a super Mormon and then I never got it back, but I expected more than be ignored. And even after I got divorced, or after we got separated, nobody ever came to visit. And which makes everything awkward, I understand, but...
But they're supposed to, according to our theology, you're supposed to step outside of that and, you know, go bear each other's burdens, right? Even if it is uncomfortable.
Right.
Okay.
And I got zero assistance. And it, that really, that was another nail in the coffin.
So...
But by that time, I was already done with the church.
Okay.
But I was still going to church every week, you know, taking my kids.
And So you, was it just the, was it just like a gradual slide out of, this just isn't true? You didn't?
Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't like you were plugging along thinking everything's true and then you find out about polyandry and it blows your mind and nothing like that happened?
No. It was just eventually just like, you know, I'm kind of done with all this.
Okay. All right. But even then you still had to keep up, like you said, you had to keep up the facade to keep your temple recommend so you could keep your job.
Exactly.
Okay. How long were you married?
About almost 7 years before we separated.
Okay. And you had two children.
Yes.
And, you moved out. Did you stay in Layton or?
I stayed in Layton. I stayed in the house.
Oh, okay. Okay.
She had moved out and got an apartment, took the kids.
Okay. All right. And what were your thoughts about what you were going to do that from that point forward with your life? Were you thinking maybe I need to be authentic and lead, you know, the lifestyle that my who I am is telling me I should lead, or
it took a while for that. About 6 months. You know, here I am now we're separated, I'm living alone. All the ward members completely are ignoring me. I'd go to church every week, but nobody would talk to me. You know, here I have an 18-month-old little girl and a 4-year-old that I'm struggling with at a church, and nobody's there to assist me in any way. You know, and I probably put on a good face because the girls were always, hair was beautifully done, their dresses were done. You know, we looked nice. Mm-hmm. It didn't look like we were struggling because I didn't want people to think I'm struggling. But I was, but nobody ever really asked.
Right. Okay.
And that made me feel pretty bad because it made me feel like I didn't really have friends like I thought I did.
So there were people in the ward that you thought were in a circle of friends with you, but they never, but it was more like a surface.
Very surface.
Okay.
I felt like if I had, if they were true friends, they would have said, come up and put their arm around me and said, "Hey, Drew, how are you doing? Are you okay?" And I never got that.
Okay. So, did you, I'm assuming that you kept going anyway because of your job.
I did.
And that probably went on for years.
It went on for a couple of years. And I continued going until I got fired.
Okay. All right. And at some point did you start developing a life that made you happy and that you were comfortable in?
About 6 months after we were separated, I started doing a few things. I met a few guys, started, and I joined a swim team and became really good friends with a lot of people. And it just made me feel very comfortable and accepted. It didn't matter if I was gay or straight or anything. I was just a person and they liked me, and that was the best feeling.
Okay. From what I know of your story, and I only know what I've read in the newspaper, was that you lost your job with the church, and I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but you lost your job with the church because you couldn't keep your temple recommend. Your bishop or your stake president took it away from you.
Yes.
So up until this point, it seems like you were, you know, checking, you know, doing everything on the checklist, doing what you had to do to keep your job, playing along. At some point, did you stop answering the questions the way they were supposed to be answered, or did you seek help, or what happened to start that?
My ex-wife found out that I was swimming with Quack, the gay swim team, and she decided to forward information on to my bishop and stake president.
Oh, okay. So you were still trying to play the game, and she And she caused the problem.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I was trying to find a job. I was trying to back out. I was doing everything I could. I was searching for jobs. I was applying. And then, you know.
So you were trying to, like, transition the responsible way.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, she basically turned you in, essentially. Exactly. And you got called into your bishop's office?
I did.
Okay. And at that time, were you, I hate all this terminology that we've developed for, like, talking about, you know, gay people and the way they live their lives. Were you living the lifestyle? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of insulting, but do you know what I mean? Like, were you dating and sinning?
I was going on dates with guys, mm-hmm. here and there. I'd go to movies or, be with guys every now and then. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't, like, I didn't have a boyfriend.
Okay.
Like that.
All right. And so when you got called into your bishop's office, did you know why you were being called in?
I knew exactly why.
She had told you I tattled?
Yeah. Well, when she found out, she threatened me to let her take the kids away from me, or she would tell.
Oh, so it was like a tool to try to get what she wanted out of the situation?
Right, because she didn't find out until after we were completely divorced.
Okay.
And custody was settled. And I didn't want me being gay any part of the divorce. And I was so afraid she was going to find out. So there's a lot of things in the divorce I let slide and didn't.
That you just let her have her way on?
Yeah. Because I didn't know what she really knew or what. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to bring things up.
Okay. Were you worried that living in Utah, that being gay was going to have a huge impact on the outcome of your divorce?
I did. A lot.
And was that just something you felt innately, or did somebody warn you, like, be careful here?
I have some friends who really helped me a lot.
Okay.
Because being gay was a huge part of them getting divorced, and mm-hmm. the custody of their kids was taken away because of it.
Because they were gay.
Really because of it. It was,
it was more indirect, but everybody kind of knew.
Right. And she got full custody of the kids. He was letting her have her way because he was afraid.
Right. Okay.
And so I didn't want to be part of the divorce because I love my kids, mm-hmm. and I wanted custody of my kids. I wanted to see them every week or mm-hmm. more. Mm-hmm. But I knew, I even filed for full custody myself, mm-hmm. knowing that I wasn't going to get full custody
because you're a man, right?
Right.
Unfortunately, the way the state works.
Because I didn't want that to have any part of the divorce.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So she let you know ahead of time, and you go in to speak to the bishop, and what happened there?
Let me back up a little.
Okay, bit. That's fine.
So when she found out, she told me, you can't see the kids anymore. I'm going to keep them. You can't have them anymore.
And just said, because you were participating on a swim team, that's all she knew
that's
about.
That's all she knew about. She said, I'm gay, and she doesn't want me to be around the kids anymore. And she says, let me have the kids or else I'll tell your family. I'll tell the bishop, and you'll lose your job. And I put my foot down, and I was like, I'm having my kids no matter what. Mm-hmm. For me, my kids are more important than anything. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if I lose my church membership. Doesn't matter if I lose my job. I couldn't have my kids taken away from me. Mm-hmm. And she came, she went through with her promise or her threat. And she told the stake president or my bishop and got called in. Mm-hmm. And she had written him a letter. And a lot of it, there was a lot of truths in it, but there were a lot of lies mm-hmm. that she talked about. And some of the lies she said were, for me, floored me. And I don't recall exactly what they were now because it's been too long. I don't have a copy of the letter.
Right. So you went into your bishop's office knowing ahead of time what would happen, and what did he want?
He wanted answers. He wanted to ask me if there's any truths to all this. And I tried to explain it away as much as I could. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that he knew I was lying, but because I wasn't ever admitting to it, there's really nothing he could do.
Okay.
And I felt bad. Mm-hmm. I hate lying mm-hmm. and hate not being truthful, mm-hmm. especially to a man that I liked, not only as my bishop, but as a friend. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we'd been in the ward and neighborhood for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm. So you knew him well.
I did.
Okay. And so did he, at the end of the meeting, did he require anything of you?
No. And that was like the initial meeting.
Okay.
And then I moved to Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And then I met, then they forwarded all the information to the Salt Lake.
Like, you had a record that they sent?
yeah, they sent a packet of information on me.
That's creepy. Okay, so you were living here in Salt Lake. You thought did you think everything was resolved?
No. My stake president made it very clear that things weren't resolved. And
your stake president in Layton?
In Layton.
Okay.
Because I was living in Salt Lake, and I was still traveling back to Layton for my interviews. And I finally said, you know, I'm not even in your jurisdiction anymore. My church leaders in Salt Lake should be dealing with me. Mm-hmm. Partially, I was thinking maybe they'd be more lenient, or I don't know.
Well, Salt Lake is the least Mormon county in Utah, so that's probably a valid thought that it would be a little bit more liberal and laid back here.
Right, and because my ex-wife had direct contact to my stake president and bishop, and they were being fed full of information.
Just anything she decided to tell him that maybe wasn't even true. And so did you want to switch to the leadership down here in Salt Lake City who she didn't have contact with?
Yeah.
And how did that turn out?
Well, my stake president made it clear that he's going to forward it and talk to my new leaders. And I said, that's fine if that's your prerogative. So I knew something was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And which delayed the inevitable.
By transferring. Okay.
So I met with the new bishop for just a few minutes, and immediately he turned it over to his stake president.
On what grounds, do you know? Was it just everything she was saying, or?
Because I was swimming on the gay swim team, and they had a huge issue with me doing that.
It just blows my mind.
There's a lot of straight guys and girls that swim on the swim team. One of the coaches is straight.
Right.
So it's not just a gay swim team.
Yeah.
It's very accepting. Anybody can swim on it. Mm-hmm.
I just have
an issue.
It seems crazy to me that all you were doing was participating on a swim team. That was the.
Right. And then I started taking my girls to Cyber Slut Bingo.
I went one time and I absolutely loved it.
I love it.
And it's a charity event.
It is. It's a huge charity event. It goes for great causes. Mm-hmm. And my girls loved it. It was great, fun for them.
A lot of fun, yeah.
There's a lot of other kids there. Mm-hmm. So it's. And when my ex-wife found out that you were taking them to drag queen bingo. Right. That she had a huge issue with that and told the stake president that I was doing that. And he had a huge issue that I was taking my girls to a gay event and associating with anybody who's gay.
And did they give you at some point, what happened after that? Did they give you an ultimatum?
He did. He gave me an ultimatum because I told him I had gay friends, and he said I had to give up all my gay friends. I had to stop associating with anybody that's gay. And my first thoughts were, you know, I need to keep my job. I should do what he says. But in the back of my head, I was thinking, I'm not going to do that because I had some awesome friends, better friends than I've ever had in my life.
Especially compared to the way you'd been treated by your ward members.
Exactly. And so I told him, okay, I'll do what I can. And I came back for a second meeting, and he asked me if I had given up my gay friends. And I said, absolutely not. I won't give up my friends who care and love me for who I am. Mm-hmm. And that's when everything turned. That's when he would not renew my temple recommend. He could not get over the fact that I was deliberately associating myself with somebody who is gay.
Did he ever pull out what is the name of that manual?
The church handbook?
Yeah. Is there provisions in there that says you can't associate or?
Well, one of the temple recommend questions is, do you associate or affiliate yourselves with anybody who is, I don't know the exact wording, that's
opposed to the church or works against the church or whatever.
Right.
And they considered just not being an active Mormon and happening to be gay as qualifying for that question.
Yeah, he said that if you're gay, you're against the church. That the church is the only group of people who the church actively is opposed to.
Oh, gosh, this is so sad.
And that really floored me because that's not true, according to all the church leaders and what they say.
Right. I mean, unless you I mean, I don't know how much they were believing of what your wife was feeding them, but it would seem to me that according to the Church Handbook of Instructions, unless you come forward and willingly admit that you have been engaging in, quote, sins, that they have no cause to do anything towards you.
Exactly. And when he asked me the question, I answered the way I was supposed to, because I didn't feel
there was any... It's none of his business.
It's none of his business. And I don't feel like associating with somebody who's gay qualifies to say no to that question.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not like... I don't think your membership should be in question if this were to happen, but it's not like you were, you know, heading up anti-Prop 8 rallies or something, right?
Right. I even put it, it's like, okay, there's a lot of other groups, like the Baptists, Southern Baptists, actively are against the church.
If I were on a swim team with Southern Baptists, did you ask that?
No, I said, well, what if I had a bunch of friends who were Southern Baptists? Would that qualify for me not
to go get to the temple? Recommend?
Well, that's different, is what he said. That's not the same.
So, okay.
So it was just, he could not get over the fact that I had gay friends and that I was not going to give up my friends.
Right. I can't remember how I first came across your story. I'm sure it was in City Weekly, but I swear there was some sort of conversation about, well, he was living a homosexual lifestyle and he wouldn't stop it, and that's why he lost his temple recommend. But it sounds like to me that...
Well, yes, I was living a homosexual lifestyle.
But they didn't know that.
They did not know it. I wasn't going to admit to it because it was my job.
Right.
And it was none of their business.
Right. So from their position, the only thing they were acting upon was your friendships. That's the only cause they had.
That's the only thing that I admitted to. Mm-hmm. That I had gay friends.
So did he take away your current temple recommend, or did he just refuse to renew?
He refused to renew it because it had been expired.
And what happens? Do you have any recourse above the stake president?
You know, I didn't pursue it. I don't know if I could have gone to an area authority 70 or if I could have pursued it above that. But part of me, but I didn't, because I was like, fine, it's done. This is my out. I'm taking it. And
yeah, I was wondering if maybe you were at that point where you were like, I wanted to clean or end this cleaner, but I'll take this.
You know, I was looking for a job. I wanted to find a job and put my 2 weeks in and say, I quit, and right, not have to give them a reason, not be forced out of the closet, not anything. I just wanted to move on with my life, but they didn't let me.
Right. So what happened after he refused to renew your recommend? What happened at that point?
I told him, if you're not going to renew it, then I'm going to lose my job. And he told me, well, you're going to have to find another job. And he told me he would give me till because I was on probation at work for 90 days. He said he would give me
because of your recommend being expired, you were on probation.
Exactly. And I was called into the HR and they gave me a letter saying if I don't get a renewed temple recommend within 90 days, then I would be fired.
And they get away with that because it's a church institution?
Yes. You know, it's according to them, it's a requirement of working for the church.
Okay. So you were already on probation and you knew you needed to get this temple recommend or they were going to cancel your employment. And he said, well, start looking for another job.
Yeah. And he was going to give me basically 4 weeks.
Okay.
Until the middle of May. And I was like, okay, I can. So I was scrambling, trying to find something and wasn't getting any luck.
Well, it's kind of a hard economy, I think, especially when it happened.
And then I got called into the office 2 weeks early. And as soon as I was called and told I need to visit with HR director at 7 a.m. Monday morning, I knew exactly what was going on. Because I went in, had my ID badge, and put it to the pass,
the key.
And it stayed red. It wouldn't go green. So I immediately knew that I was fired. I'd been around long enough to know exactly the process they take.
They call you in on a Monday morning?
I was already supposed to be there.
Oh, okay.
But they called me and said, when you get here, you need to come and talk to the director.
Okay. So you knew you were fired. What happens then?
They handed me my final paycheck and a letter of termination. They walked me to my desk. I cleaned out all my personal items and was escorted to my car and I left.
How are you feeling out during while well, that all that was happening?
I was very.
Was it humiliating? Very humiliating.
Because everybody, because my office had a bank of windows that mm-hmm. everybody on the production floor could see, and everybody was stopping and staring, trying to figure out what was going on. And it was very obvious to everybody that I was being terminated.
Right.
And you know, I wanted to say goodbye to people. I wanted to say things. I had a couple of people want to try to talk to me, and they were, you know, told to leave me alone. They did not speak to me.
What? Are you really?
I wasn't allowed. to talk to anybody.
Just gets more and more disappointing the more you talk. That's really sad.
and I had some great friends there, and I'm in contact with a couple of them mm-hmm. still, and they're great people. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few that I would love to contact, but I don't know their feelings or thoughts about everything.
Right.
You know, because I had to, when I was going to work, I had to still put on that facade that I was straight. I couldn't tell them about any activities I was going on.
So they didn't know about what was going on until you lost your job then?
Yeah, I didn't discuss anything because I didn't want to tell them I didn't have a Tupper recommend at work because they would have terminated my job immediately.
If you had told anybody. Yeah.
If I would have gone to HR and said, by the way, I don't have a Tupper recommend, I would have been terminated.
I think working for the church is a lot more creepy than I thought it was.
It is. And it's amazing how many work for the church that aren't, that are the same way, that they're gay, but they do exactly what I'm doing.
Because they have to.
Because they have to. And I don't hold anything against them for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I'm glad they have a job.
Yeah, and I agree with you. So how did it go public? How did it get an end up in the news?
One of my good friends asked if I would talk to a reporter at City Weekly. And because okay. he was really one of my good friends, and he had been there through many of my issues, and I could go and cry to him and say, hey, this is what's going on in my life. And so he knew my story really well. And he said that I should get my story out there.
Okay.
And so I kind of spurred the moment and said, sure, let's do it. I didn't really think twice about it. And it was contacted and it was interviewed, and that's how it went public.
And were you on the cover? That was that the cover story that week?
It wasn't no. The cover story. Okay. It was a few pages in.
Okay. I must have just seen
but,
a link to
but
it was
was on an email. Mm-hmm. You know how they do the Beehive, you know, Fast Five and the Beehive. It was on one of those emails.
Okay. All right. And what kind of response did you get?
I had overwhelming support from a lot of people. There's also a lot of people who are very negative.
Well, he doesn't want to play by the rules and he should get out and he shouldn't be mad about it. That kind of a thing.
Exactly. The thing is, I wasn't mad about it. I was like, this is done. This is exactly what happened to me. And I didn't ever go and comment on anybody's comments because it was their comment and their thoughts and whatever. It wasn't going to do me any good to get in an argument with somebody online. You know, if they weren't my friend, they didn't know my story.
Right.
And they could think what they wanted.
Right.
But I had an overwhelming response. I had so many people come out of the woodwork saying, you know, Drew, we love you. Mm-hmm. I've had some great friends from high school contact me and say, hey, we're here. We support you. Mm-hmm. We love you no matter what. Mm-hmm. And that was the best feeling. Mm-hmm. Knowing that there's a lot of people that I didn't know would like me anymore or not. And that really, truly are great people. They're very non-judgmental and just good people out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think you told me that the day that they took your Tupper recommend, that was the end of your participation in the church.
Exactly. That was the last time I decided I was going to go to church. I wasn't going to pay them any more tithing. I wasn't going to do anything. I was done.
And this happened in, did this happen in 2011? 2010?
2011.
2011.
February of 2011 is when they when I lost my Tupper recommend, and then I was terminated at the beginning of March.
Okay. So you've been without the church structure and without having to play all those games since then. Did you find a good replacement job?
It took me a while. I have a good job. It keeps me busy. It keeps me sometimes too busy. Mm-hmm. You know, it pays quite a bit less. The benefits aren't as great, but I'm very grateful for a job.
Okay. And how about things with your family? And I mean, did they know that you were gay before this?
They didn't.
And did they find out through the paper, or did no. do you tell them what was going on with your bishop? And
after I was terminated that day, mm-hmm. I called my mom and talked to her, and she asked me a few questions of why I lost my temple recommend. And so I told her, mm-hmm. and she asked me if I had, you know, an issue with same-sex attraction. And I told her yes. And then she asked if I had participated or acted upon it. And I continued to tell her yes. And then she went off about how having sex outside of marriage was wrong, and that two men will never be able to get married. So, you know, sex with a man is wrong. And it's been really estranged ever since. And I feel really bad, because I really love my mom. But we can't sit and talk and chat like we used to.
There's a barrier there that you can't get past.
There's a huge barrier. When I go see my family, they rarely really talk to me about my life. They're very willing to tell me all about their lives and who they're dating or their kids or their family, their struggles, but they never ask me about mine.
They don't even ask you about like your job and your children and...
They ask about my kids, you know, and
but it's like, very surfacey still.
Very surfacey.
And do you think that'll improve?
I hope so. I really hope so. My last conversation on the phone with my mom was on my birthday, mm-hmm. and it was very estranged, and it was very, very difficult, because I wanted to be able to share with her some of my joys in my life, but I know she wouldn't want to hear it because she would feel it was me sinning.
Right.
You know, I would wish I could tell her how happy I am and really fully have her believe that I'm happy, but she doesn't believe I'm happy.
Have you told her? Have you just thought, okay, I'm just going to tell her I'm happy? And does she respond to it?
No, I've never done that. Mm. Maybe I could. Mm-hmm. But
well, that's really unfortunate.
You know, I recently came out to her, one of her brothers in California.
An uncle.
Mm-hmm. And great response. Very overwhelming, full of love. Mm-hmm. They're not judgmental. Mm-hmm. They're not Mormon. It's great. Okay, now I have some family who loves me for me, and they don't care.
Rather than who you were pretending to be to please everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's fun being me and being happy.
Yeah, even with the struggles that come along. Do you feel like, even though all that stuff happened that was awful, you're in a better place now? Are you kind of
totally
glad much better it place. Happened, I guess?
In a sense, yeah. Yeah. You know, I guess I need to thank my ex-wife for, in a way, you know, part of me doesn't, but I'm glad it happened because mm-hmm. it helped me just be me. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about anything. I don't have to worry about who knows I'm gay or not.
You're kind of free now.
Yeah. And it's wonderful. If somebody walks up and says, "Are you gay?" I'm like, "Yeah, I am." So what?
Right. Yeah. Are you straight?
Yeah. You wouldn't walk up to somebody. "Are you straight?"
Right. So are things with your children still good? And
things with my kids are great.
Good.
We have a lot of fun together.
Good.
It's just, they're so much fun and they're happy.
Good. And has the church reached out to you at all? Tried to?
Not in any way. You know, they've never, even after I was terminated and I didn't have a job, my state president knew that I wasn't going to get any form of
unemployment.
At all. So they gave me a last paycheck, and then I was without any money or an income until I found a new job. You know, because the church is a nonprofit organization, they don't pay any taxes, including the unemployment tax. So unemployment isn't available to anybody who they terminate.
Wow.
So I felt like they kicked me to the curb and then stomped on me.
Yeah.
Because they didn't reach out to me and say, "Hey, we know you're without income. Do you need some food? Do you need your rent paid? Do you need something for your kids?" You know, because I was active in the ward and I was taking them. They knew I had two young daughters, mm-hmm. but they didn't reach out in any way. But I didn't reach out to them either. I wasn't going to go beg for their help.
Well, that would be like, you know, "I just kicked my dog, but it better come over here and lick my hand." You know, I mean, it would be ludicrous for them to expect you to come back and be treated horribly again.
Right.
But it's really sad how, I guess they just viewed you as an unrepentant sinner and therefore you didn't deserve any compassion or help maybe.
Right. You know, how many years did I pay tithing and fast offerings and donations to all their causes?
Yeah.
And then to get nothing in return, that hurt. That one hurt.
Yeah.
But I was able to survive just fine. You know, it was a struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to pinch my pennies and mm-hmm. save every dime and not spend. And my new job came at the perfect moment.
Mm-hmm. Right when you needed it.
So.
Well, that's really, I'm glad you landed on your feet and that you're free now and that, do you see, other than your relationship with your parents, it doesn't seem like there has been any lasting bad outcome from all of this.
No, I don't think so.
That's good.
Everything's on up and up and that's positive. Good. I enjoy my life, enjoy my kids. I have mm-hmm. great friends. I socialize with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it's great. I meet new people all the time.
Good. You still on Quack?
I got hurt and had to stop swimming. But I've recovering and I need to get back.
Gotcha.
I get pestered by quite a few of them that I need to get swimming again.
Oh, good.
And I'll get there eventually.
Okay. So how are you as far as like your spirituality? Are you an atheist? Do you have spiritual beliefs?
I don't think I'm an atheist, but I don't pray. I don't know where I'm at with everything. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of like, here
you'll
I am.
Find out eventually.
I'll
find out.
Yeah. I'm not going to knock anybody who wants to pray or go to church mm-hmm. Because that's what they need. Mm-hmm. For me, I don't need church. I don't need an organized religion mm-hmm. To be happy. So okay. I'm having fun.
Good. Good. Well, I think those are all the questions I had for you. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about tonight?
No, I think okay. we covered quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to participate and coming down to there's a dual name for this studio. It's either Studio Fist in Your Face or the Den of Iniquity. We don't quite know which one, but thank you for coming down and letting me interview you. And I think your story was very worth sharing and I appreciate that you shared it.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Think I should be. No, I'm standing here at the end of who I once was. Not sure yet of who I will become. Oh, but I'm feeling brave. I got nothing to lose. I'm so beautiful as I make no excuse. Now
Directing, producing, and editing was done by Heather C., and the theme music was provided by McCall Erickson. Thank you for listening. Mormon Expression Voices is a production of the Whitefields Educational Foundation. Find us on the web at whitefieldseducational.org. The Mormon Expression and Mormon Expression Voices podcasts, as well as other educational initiatives, are made possible by your generous donations. Please consider a subscription today.